From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. It is Wednesday, October 9th. Welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host today, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC. I'm Jody Heiss, an honor to be sitting in for Tony today. Certainly, our hearts go out to those who potentially are in harm's way of Hurricane Milton. We continue to pray for them. In addition to that, we've got a lot more coming your way today.
We've been tracking these couple guys since August, working with the FBI on surveillance and really scary stuff. Yeah. I mean, undercover agents sold them some weapons, and we were able to piece everything together and finally take them out.
Well, that was Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt after the FBI arrested an Afghan citizen in the United States who was here on a special visa. He was here along with a relative who was a minor. But he's been charged now with plotting an Election Day suicide attack on behalf of ISIS. Oklahoma Congressman Jasper Keene, who's a member of the Homeland Security Committee, will be joining me here in just a few moments to discuss this arrest and the reality that it underscores in regard to the Biden-Harris immigration policies. And the president today, President Biden, spoke by phone to Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. They were discussing Israel's response to Iran's ballistic missile attack last week. But with the election approaching and the Harris campaign losing support from both Jewish and Muslim voters, is there some sort of political calculation that's being played into all of this? We'll be talking about that with Congressman Keith Self, a member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, a little bit later in the program. And we also have a new report coming out of Johns Hopkins University that confirms the rise of homeschooling in the United States. Well, why have so many parents chosen to pursue that option for their children? Well, stay tuned. We'll be talking about it with Josh Gruey, who's the executive director of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association Action.
When we introduce a child or an individual to the idea that they can change genders, we devalue who they are in Christ. The second thing is when we give them hormones, we dehumanize who they are in Christ. And when we cut body parts off these individuals for the purpose of changing their identity, we destroy who they are in Christ.
Well, that was FRC's Walt Heyer speaking at the Pray Vote Stand Summit last week regarding the physical and spiritual harm is done to young people in the name of transgender ideology and care. That was a powerful, powerful panel that he was on. And now we have a report that's come out from an organization called Do Not Harm that was taken from between 2019 and 23. It reveals that these procedures comprised a $120 million industry, and it affected nearly 14,000 children in the United States. I'll be talking about that with Dr. Miriam Gross from Do Not Harm a little further in the program. And speaking of the Pray Vote Stand Summit, just real quickly, if you happen to miss it last week, it's not too late to catch the highlights. I strongly urge you to do so. You can go to TonyPerkins.com, our website there, TonyPerkins.com, for more info. All right, we've got a lot coming your way. Let's go ahead and jump into our top story. According to a criminal complaint that was filed yesterday, the FBI has arrested now an Afghan citizen in Oklahoma City, and he's been charged with plotting an Election Day suicide attack in the name of ISIS. The suspect, Nasir Ahmad Tawhidi, was arrested this week after buying two AK-47 assault rifles and other weaponry from an undercover FBI agent in Oklahoma. He entered the United States in 2021 under a special visa, which again underscores the Biden-Harris administration's repeated failures to manage the entire immigration vetting process. Well, joining me now to discuss today's results and what's coming forth right now is Congressman Josh Burkine. He serves on the House Homeland Security Committee as well as the Budget Committee. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of the great state of Oklahoma. Congressman Burkine, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Jody. Glad to be with you. Thanks for having us on.
All right. Listen, all of this went down, is going down, I might should say, in your home state. So give us the latest. What do we know so far?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to be able to give you much greater insight than what you're already, you know, hearing. The fact that we have this Afghan individual who, because of the debacle of the way that this country withdrew, and then the lack of vetting that took place, that you've got an inspector general who was saying from Homeland Security that this process is ripe for people to fall through the cracks. Well, this is the result. And so you've had heightened numbers of people with this special visa, and the Biden administration and what happened with Afghanistan has shown the American people, in addition to what's coming across the southern border, just how vulnerable we are for attack, because they're not taking national security seriously.
Yeah, vulnerable is a key word. I just underline that, highlight it, and circle it, because we are so, so vulnerable, and what's happening at the southern border just amplifies that. I remember vividly our office was so, so involved in helping people get out of Afghanistan. And one of the things we were trying to do was vet these people. And to be very honest, we were getting very, very little to no help of any consequence from the State Department. And it's no wonder that we are having issues like this right now. Do you have any more information about the special visa? What kind of special visa was received that allowed this individual to come in?
No, Jody, I don't. Quick answer. I've got my staff, you know, looking into what, if anything, the administration has done by executive order. But it just looks like that the inspector general bringing this, you know, to the forefront months ago, saying that the vetting is not occurring like it should. That's an administrative failure. That is an agency failure.
Absolutely. Well, again, I go back to the words you used a while ago, the vulnerabilities that we now are facing because of the horrible administration immigration policies that we're all, really the entire country, is suffering literally under right now. If I can switch gears with you a little bit, Congressman, you serve on the Homeland Security Committee, which of course has oversight over FEMA. And of course, FEMA is all over the news these days, and rightfully so. But can you help us make sense of the assistance or lack thereof coming from FEMA after Hurricane Helene? And then we had DHS Secretary Mayorkas' comments about running out of money. Is FEMA out of money?
So the funds that are going towards illegal immigrants for a 2-year time period have reached the sum total of $1.5 billion, and that is a different fund than the disaster recovery fund within FEMA's budget. However, the $20 billion that came through the continuing resolution, you know, several weeks ago, makes sure that a continuation of operations for FEMA is ongoing, meaning that they should not be in a situation where they're saying there's a lack of funding. But if a lack of funding is to be discussed, it's the $1.5 billion that's been utilized by this administration for housing and other services going to illegal immigrants who should not be in this country to begin with. And it's a mismanagement of the public trust this administration continues to showcase.
Yeah, is any of that $1.5 billion, number one, is that legitimate funds to be used in the manner that FEMA has used it? And could those funds, in fact, have been used for emergencies here in the U.S.?
Well, look, you and I both know appropriators can take money in the appropriations process and say, we're not going to need to fill this fully. We're going to shift it over to this other, especially when it's under the same agency, right? So the simple answer is, yes, that money could be otherwise spent. But the fund it exists. Was it put there for illegal aliens? I think the simple answer is, when you've got federal statute that says that anybody coming across our southern border is to be detained until there's a proceeding, which means an adjudication of where they're determined to be here lawfully or unlawfully, means they are to be removed. the money being used for housing in hotels should never occur if you're fully abiding by the Immigration and Nationality Act.
Yeah, that is exactly the question I have had with all of this money that supposedly has gone there. Of course, the administration is denying it. In fact, I want to play a clip here in just a second and get your reaction to it all. But why would that money be used for illegals? I can't wrap my brain around how FEMA would have that money specifically to use it in the way that allegedly they've used it for illegals. Let me go ahead and play this clip and get your reaction to this. Clip number three, please.
They're saying the money is needed for this crisis is being diverted to migrants. What a ridiculous thing to say. It's not true.
Okay, so he's just saying it's not true. Now, I don't know how you take that. I take the president's comment there as saying none of those funds have even been used for illegal migrants. Can you straighten the record out for us? What's the truth?
Okay, so under FEMA, there are two lines of funding. One is for disaster recovery funds, and that is something that is, my understanding, based upon what we've seen since the vote 2 weeks ago, there was $20 billion put forward that will be a contingent of governance up until the ending point of that resolution. Now, Jody, you know, full transparency, I didn't vote for that cigar, but the money is set aside for disaster recovery. But what we're discussing is another line of funding that this administration has been, I would say, utilizing unlawfully, has been the $1.5 billion over a two-year period that's gone towards housing and other services for illegal aliens, not less to mention the NGOs, the non-government organizations that are a sort a taxi service that are taking these individuals using taxpayer money to transport them from point A to point B of choice. I mean, it's ridiculous that the federal taxpayer is picking up the tab for bringing them into the interior of the United States, housing them, providing food, and then moving them into the location of their choice, when the Immigration and Nationality Act says, if by law, you are to be detained until there is a proceeding. That's what Congress said. All legislative powers, according to Article 1, Section 1, as you know, of the Constitution, says all legislative powers should be vested in the Congress. So we have an administration that run afoul of what the Immigration and Nationality Act has already said, and has taken upon themselves to use funds. Let's say that these funds were to be utilized for you know, true asylum purposes, for housing or food. When you're using it for illegal purposes, illegal ends, that's unlawful. That's against the rule of law.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and now I guess the big question, we have less than a minute, probably about 30 seconds or so, so a really short response. But we've had Hurricane Helene, now Hurricane Milton, both devastating storms. Does FEMA have the capacity to step in and help?
My understanding is, given the $20 billion, I think it's the $20 million, I misspoke, the $20 billion post 2 weeks ago, it's been allocated until that CR runs out, is sufficient to be able to do this. Now, if some news comes forward, which I've not seen, Homeland Security has sent me the information I just cited to you. If it turns out that Congress is going to have to return, I'm not aware of it. Homeland Security, authorizing authority, says there's $20 billion there to get us to the end of December 20th.
Congressman Josh Pokrzywinski, thank you so much. Always great to talk with you. All right, friends, after the break, we're going to talk Israel. What's coming up? We've got much more coming your way on Washington Watch, so don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this break.
We humbly, Father, bow before you in these moments that we have together, that this wouldn't just be any other conference, but that literally, Lord, you would reset our hearts to be in alignment with your word, that you would reset the city of Washington, D.C. to be in realignment with your word.
There's no politician, including Trump, that can affect the soul of this nation. You're the only one. The answer's not in the State House, and it's not going to be in the White House. It's got to be in your own house. It's got to be in the church of God. It's got to be in his house.
Our principles never bend to politicians.
Yes.
Our principles never bend to politicians. By God's grace, it will be the other way around. politicians will bend to our biblically based child protective principles.
No matter what comes in November, no matter if it doesn't go the way you want or I want or the things we prayed for, our focus and priorities do not change as Christians. We fight against evil. We stand for truth. We tell people the good news of Jesus Christ. We tell them the truth.
So let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
There are 40 million self-described evangelical Christians who do not vote in a presidential election. If half of those people who sit in church on their blessed assurance would pray, stand, and vote, we would change every election in this country from the school board all the way to the White House.
All it takes, friends, is one generation for us to lose what is valuable, important, and sacred. Every generation has the opportunity to preserve what is right, what is godly, what is good about the United States of America, or to shirk our responsibilities and to watch what happens in just one generation in our country.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know always that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank you. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to you, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. Glad to have you on board with us as well. Okay, earlier today, President Biden spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and they discussed Israel's potential response to Iran for its October 1st ballistic missile attack. The discussion, of course, is coming as the Harris campaign continues a very calculated effort to target Jewish voters in the swing states. And ever since the October 7th terrorist attack on Israel last year, we've all watched the anti-Israel tactics coming from the left. Well, have swing state voters also taken notice of all of that? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Keith Self. He serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee as well as the Veterans Affairs Committee, and he represents the 3rd Congressional District of Texas. Congressman Self, always great to have you on Washington Watch. Welcome back.
Good to be with you, Jody. Thank you.
All right. I'd like to open up with a clip from White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. This came at today's White House press briefing. I'd like to play this clip and get your reaction.
I think what you have seen from this administration is the continued support for Israel's security. When Iran attacked Israel, the president directed his military to protect Israel. He was very proud to be able to do that, and that support continues.
Is this a shift of direction? This does not sound like the administration I've been watching for a long time in regard to Israel.
Well, that was a half-truth, because we have protected Israel in the recent past. But remember, they delayed a shipment of very necessary weapons back in the springtime. Recently, President Biden tried to influence them in their attack against nuclear facilities. So they have been putting obstacles in the way of the Israelis ever since October 7th a year ago. And I will tell you that this is only a half-truth, what she said. We need to be fully behind Israel. And yes, it is a shift in policy. Look, they've been pandering to the students with student loans. They're now pandering to the Jewish community. They've been pandering for years to the Muslim community in Michigan, for instance. So they will pander wherever they think they need to.
Yeah, and I mean, they've allowed anti-Israeli protests all over the country. They've not come out stopping that, really even speaking much against it at all. Vice President Harris comes out this week majorly questioning any alliance with the prime minister. And what you mentioned, even the delayed shipment of armament, my understanding still a good bit of that has not yet gone to Israel in spite of Congress appropriating those funds. I can't help but look at all of this and connect the dots personally that this is nothing but a political move, not a real foreign policy move, but a political one.
Absolutely. If we're going to stand in their way of doing what's in the interest of the Israeli people, then we are not doing our job of defending our best ally in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East. I called upon the president to release all of the armaments that we have approved for Israel, as well as start enforcing the sanctions against Iran. Five colleagues joined me in that letter, and we expect the administration to support Israel as the majority of the American people want the Biden-Harris administration to do.
Yeah, you mentioned it too a while ago that, you know, this whole thing looked as though they started out really trying to pander, I think was your words, to the Muslim voters in Michigan, elsewhere, mm-hmm. And that evidently didn't work. So now it seems to be a plan B, where Harris-Walz campaign in recent days is targeting Jewish voters in swing states. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly right. They realize there's a majority of the American people that want them to support Israel. They were pandering to one small community, one community in one state, because they think they need Michigan. But they realized they were making a mistake with the majority of the American people who do support Israel and do want them to defend Israel, help defend Israel against Iran.
So are you seeing this, that really could be the issue? Have they lost Muslim voters in Michigan? And if so, why?
Well, I haven't seen the polling on it, so I don't know. But the anti-Israel vote, to include the Muslim voters, theoretically, in Michigan, they will watch this and they will say that they have shifted. I think they'll come to the same conclusion that you and I have, that they have flipped the script and they're now supporting Israel, and that may cost them some Muslim votes.
Yeah, I think it costs votes on both sides. But I mean, it all just flip-flop. It all depends on, like, what's the polling saying right now? And based upon whatever that is, hey, let's jump in on the bandwagon and look like we're marching at the head of this parade, when in reality that's not the case at all. I think it just costs votes on both sides, because there's no compass. There appears to be no inner conviction whatsoever to stand for Israel, or, as they have done, not stand for Israel, but just all based upon what is the current most popular position to have.
Well, I think we see that in issues well beyond Israel. People are realizing they have no core principles. They have no core beliefs. They have no core policies that they will enforce. They do what is exigent at the time. And we realize that now with the flip-flops on many issues, or the lack of policy on many issues. The Biden-Harris campaign, now the Harris-Walz campaign, has no core foundation. And people are starting to realize that, Jody. This is only one issue that we see this coming to fruition.
Yeah, it looks like the only core value that they embrace with a tight grip with both hands is abortion. They are committed to the death of babies in the womb. And that is what they appear to be running on first and foremost. All these other things, it's just whichever way the wind is blowing, let's jump on board.
Yeah. Well, the other one is anti-Trump. I encourage people to realize how dedicated they are to keeping Donald Trump out of office. Listen to what they say. Take them at their word. That is the other principle on which they run.
Good point. Congressman Keith Self, it is always an honor to have you join us on Washington Watch. Thanks so much for all you do for our country and the great state of Texas. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Jody. Thank you.
All right, coming up, a new report is out on the rise of homeschooling. We want to bring that info your way, and we'll do so right after the break. So don't go anywhere. Much more Washington Watch is headed your way. We'll be back in just a moment.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
So glad to have you joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I am your host, Jody Heiss, sitting in today for Tony. All right, last month, a Johns Hopkins School of Education report made waves in the education world. The report found, among other things, that homeschooling is actually on the rise across the United States. Here now to react to the report's finding is Joel Grewey. He is the executive director for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association Action. Joel, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, you are very, very welcome. Exciting news here, and I think disturbing news for some on the left for sure. But what were your takeaways from this study?
So it was really interesting. As everyone knew during COVID, at a certain point, particularly for a couple of weeks, everyone was a homeschooler. Everybody was doing education at home. And in a sense, that created this massive surge of people that identified as homeschoolers. And then as schools reopened, logically, we knew people were going to go back into what they considered their normal form of education. But while that occurred, and there was obviously a retrenchment of numbers, homeschooling and people who were adopting that as a choice, not just a fill in the gap, continued to rise. And we're seeing that work its way out now in the numbers. And once you get kind of the surge in and out effect going away, which I think COVID created, you're seeing the continued growth of homeschooling. And I think that's because of the inherent advantages and attractions of homeschooling that parents and students are finding.
Yeah, the great point. I mean, parents and students are fighting for the rights to raise the kids, the rights to educate their kids, the right to determine what their kids and how their kids are going to be educated. Is that really the driving force behind all this?
That's one of them. Homeschooling occurs, honestly, for an amazing variety of reasons. Homeschooling is the ultimate customization of education. And as we know, God makes every kid unique. He makes every person unique, right? It is not an irrational extension of that understanding to recognize that how they learn and how best to teach them, and the uniqueness of the parents, the home they're in, all of that put together can result in customized education. And homeschooling is the ultimate way to do that. If you've got a kid that's special needs or has a specific interest or talent, or some sort of God-given interest or area they want to learn in, standardized education in a box sometimes really struggles to meet those needs or talents and opportunities. Homeschooling is inherently able to do that. In fact, you see a remarkable number of kids really thrive in that, and I think that's what's resulted in its increasing growth. You also see it as a major reaction to failures in the traditional form of education, which is why we're seeing record numbers of Hispanics and Blacks, Black Americans, who are homeschooling. It's happening all across the United States because you can do it anywhere, and you can do it with a very low dollar amount compared to normal other forms of education. And everyone had to learn that lesson during COVID. And some people went, you know, that wasn't a bad idea. We're going to stick with that.
Wow. So are you at all surprised by the upward trend here for homeschooling?
Nah, I'm really not. Now, to be fair, I was a homeschool kid. I had to talk my mom into it back in the day. She was worried she couldn't do it. And I said, we'll give it a try. Mom, please let me be homeschooled. If it doesn't work in a year, I'll go back. And I didn't. And now my wife and I homeschool our kids. And it's been a great thing for them. My boys have very unique and different interests. I've got three boys. And all of them with different talents and God-given gifts. And we can really use homeschooling as a way to equip them and prepare them. And at the same time, we have to recognize, and I think the Homeschool Hub research article recognized the fact that in their research, they weren't able to tell you why people were choosing home education, just that more and more people were, which actually fits a larger national trend where you are seeing people leaving traditional public education for alternatives. Homeschooling is the first and earliest form of alternative education, as it were, in kind of this modern world. Obviously, private schools have been around. Homeschoolers, no offense, we predate every other form of education on the planet. So we do get to call ourselves the original, but in modern educational choice, it's been going on since the 80s and really has grown to be not a kind of fringe movement, but to an enduring institution, legal in all 50 states, growing in the vast majority of them. I think the only two that it might not be is New Hampshire and Vermont. And part of that is because they count people differently there in a change in law. But we're really seeing that growth. And we're seeing it in places where people found that the options they had in front of them weren't serving their needs. And it was a variety of needs. Sometimes it was safety. Sometimes it was educational quality. Sometimes it was content that parents found they disagreed with that was being pushed toward their kids in the traditional school. Sometimes it was a unique gift they wanted to be able to help their kids capitalize on.
Wow. Let me just real quickly, and by the way, we homeschooled our kids too. And I say we, let me just be honest. My wife led that charge all the way to college, and it was just fantastic. Wouldn't take anything for it. But for some parents and grandparents right now who are potentially interested in homeschooling their kids, we've got less than a minute left, but where can they go to get some more information, maybe some resources about homeschooling and that sort of thing?
Well, the nationwide information shop is going to be HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We've been around for about 40 some years, and we kind of have a bit of everything when it comes to homeschooling. And once you get the legal part of it put together and where they go from there, we've got a place on our website where you can go to find local homeschool groups in your area, your state groups, the different kind of communities that help come around homeschoolers to make them thrive, to help them excel. That would be the place I would start. Depending where your state is, every state in the nation, I think, has some sort of homeschool group. If not, local co-ops where you can find that meet at your local church, local library, maybe the local park, that work on different projects together. Homeschoolers kind of get the reputation of being isolated, but really, we're very not. And you Absolutely. Probably know a decent number of them, and you don't even know they're homeschoolers.
Very true. Thank you, Joel Gruey, Homeschool Legal Defense Association Action Executive Director there. We appreciate you coming on. And great news about homeschooling. Thank you. All right, friends, on the other side of the break, we've got some information about just how pervasive is the child gender mutilation surgery industry. It may shock you. Dr. Miriam Grossman will join me to discuss all the numbers. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/bible. and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Thank you so much for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, your host, sitting in today for Tony. All right, we are, as you well know, less than a month away, I believe 26 days away from the 2024 election. And without question, the biggest need we have for our country is prayer. We need the divine intervention and the good hand of God. Will you join us here at FRC in praying for a spiritual awakening in our nation as we head into this election cycle? We want to provide for you a free 40-day election prayer guide. This is straight off the press, the FRC's 40-day prayer guide. You can get it free simply by texting the word PRAY to 67742. That's PRAY to 6742, 67742. We'd love to get that in your hands. All right, yesterday, an organization called Do No Harm released what they call the Stop the Harm database. Now, what this does, it catalogs the hospitals and the medical centers throughout the United States that have trafficked in gender procedures for children. The whole study takes place between the years between 2019 and 2023. And, you know, we've got a lot, primarily within the LGBTQ community, that claim that all these interventions and so forth are not even happening. But the report found these experimental procedures are indeed happening. In fact, it has become an almost $120 million industry. It has affected nearly 14,000 minors, including more than 5,000 who have had mutilating surgeries. Wow. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Miriam Grossman. She's a board-certified psychiatrist. She's a senior fellow at the DoNoHarmMedicine.org and the author of five books, including Lost in Transnation, A Child Psychiatrist's Guide Out of the Madness. What a great title. Dr. Grossman, welcome to Washington Watch. We're thrilled to have you.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so let's just jump out of the gate. Tell us about this report. What did you find, and what do you hope that is going to be accomplished through this?
Well, this release of data is really a nuclear bomb. And I'm so pleased that Do No Harm, an incredible group of medical professionals, anyone who's in your audience who's a medical professional should join up, donoharmmedicine.org. They yesterday released an incredible set of data, we've never had this before, in which they examined insurance claims that have been made by doctors and hospitals and clinics regarding so-called gender-affirming care, in which minors are provided with medical interventions in order to make them appear as if they are the opposite sex. Now, as you said earlier, we are led to believe by politicians and by many groups that these interventions are very rare and hardly happening at all in this country. And that is simply not true. And the numbers that you just mentioned, for example, 14,000 minors undergoing these treatments, that's actually an undercount, because Do No Harm was not able to, for example, access the records, the medical insurance claims from Kaiser Permanente in California, a huge, of course, health network of hospitals and clinics. And they do a tremendous amount of these gender interventions. They also are not counting any of the treatments that were paid for privately. So those numbers that you quoted, 14,000 undergoing treatment, almost 6,000 with surgeries, 8,500 receiving hormones and puberty blockers, and I don't think you mentioned this one, 62,000 prescriptions were written for minors. And the total submitted charges was over $119 million. So this is an industry. And it is an industry that sterilizes minors, that leaves them unable to have biological children.
So let me ask you, with all of that that was left out of the study, Kaiser Permanente and some of the others, is it possible that these numbers, staggering as they are, could it be that these numbers really just could potentially just represent the tip of the iceberg of what could really be taking place?
Well, look, we can only speculate about what's going on at Kaiser. People in the audience may be aware that Kaiser has already been hit with a few lawsuits, medical malpractice suits, in California by residents there who have been harmed by their gender-affirming care. So we can only speculate. And in terms of what's going on, people who pay privately, that's also speculation. I know that at one point when I was writing my book, I went on to that website where people raise money. What is that called?
GoFundMe?
Yes, thank you. GoFundMe. Thank you. So at the time, this was a few years ago, there were girls on there raising money for their double mastectomies. 47,000 girls.
Wow.
Were trying to raise money to pay for their mastectomy. So, unreal. Yes. I don't know if this is the probably the numbers are they're not 100% accurate. The numbers are actually higher than what
it sounds like. It certainly they're conservative numbers at best. So let me just ask, if I can, a little bit of a switching of gears. The study also came out with the Dirty Dozen. We're referring to the worst offenders as it relates to the hospitals that are participating in these type of surgeries. How did you compile this list of hospitals, this Dirty Dozen, and what did you find here?
Well, again, they looked at the hospitals that and the facilities that were offering these treatments, and They looked at the number of patients who underwent these treatments, the claims that were made to insurance, and the hospital's promotion of sex change treatments in the local community. Some of these hospitals are actually, you know, activists. They are reaching out into the community and promoting their services. So those were all the different factors. And then they picked the 12 hospitals that were deemed to best meet those criteria. They called those hospitals the Dirty Dozen. So the one of the beautiful elements about this database is that people can go on there and see if their local children's hospital is one of those 12 Dirty Dozen.
Wow. All right. So one more time real quickly before I hit the next question. What is that website while it's on people's minds?
Yeah,
StopTheHarmDatabase.com. All right, yeah. Now you've been a part of this this battle and an advocate, a great voice for a long, long time. In fact, you recently testified before Congress. Why is it, this question comes to me a lot, why is it that the medical establishment is so willing to embrace these harmful procedures for children?
Well, there's two reasons. One is that our mainstream medical organizations, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Psychiatric Association, for many years have been taken over by a small group of activists who simply push their agendas forward and stifle debate. And second reason is that too many of my colleagues are simply spineless and not willing to speak up against it. But now, you know, with the release of this database, there's really no excuse. And especially pediatricians, endocrinologists, and surgeons, you know, enough is enough. You need to step up to the plate and do what every good ethical doctor is supposed to do. And that's speak the truth and to do no harm. And these children and families are being harmed in the most horrific way, because not only are they being physically disfigured, they're losing the capacity to have biological children in the future. Many of them will have impaired sexual functioning, inability to have sexual pleasure, and many, many other medical and psychiatric problems. So are calling out, you know, do no harm, where I'm a senior fellow, are calling out to physicians and other medical professionals to stand up, to join us, and to say enough is enough. We are doctors, we are medical professionals, and we're not going with radical, destructive agenda.
Good for you. Yeah, and it's time to stop the harm, for sure. I would say probably a third reason you brought it up a moment ago is the money. I mean, this is now a huge industry that's fueling all of this. But in talking about putting a stop to it all, we are seeing some momentum backing away from this ideology. I mean, the Cass report, I'm sure you're familiar with, it spurred a ton of changes in the UK. In fact, even here in the United States, when it comes to some of these medical associations, most of them certainly have fallen in line, but I think it was last month the American Society of Plastic Surgeons broke away with all this transgender ideology. They came out and stated that their organization opposes all the unscientific consensus that's prevalent throughout other professional medical organizations. So are we watching a movement away from all the...
If I could just correct you for one moment, that was the president of the American Association of Plastic Surgery, the president, not the entire organization. But yes, I'm very optimistic, in fact. And having watched this develop, you know, over many, many years, I'm extremely optimistic to see all the changes just in the past year. As you say, the Cass report, the many countries in Europe and elsewhere that are turning around and saying, there's no evidence that we're even helping these kids, and what the kids need is psychotherapy. So yeah, there's a tremendous, things are turning around. And I am optimistic that we are winning, but yet the body count is very high.
Well, it needs to turn around. I mean, the science is not there. The harm being done to children, it's all just glaring us all in the face that this kind of stuff needs to stop. So let me, along those lines, let me ask you this. When people are told that they are born or may be born in the wrong body, from a your position as a psychiatrist, what does this do to the person?
Well, this is an extremely children, especially, and that is what's going on at a very, very young age. Kids are being told that when they were born, the adult in the room just made a guess about whether they were a boy or a girl, and that guess may have been correct or it may have been incorrect. This is a terribly destabilizing and false idea to plant in these young minds. So, we really need to go and go back to the very beginning of all this education forced on children through sex education, Planned Parenthood, CECUS, and abortion. Because to answer your question, it makes them terribly confused, anxious, and sometimes suicidal.
Well, there's no doubt it would do that. I mean, you could just see it coming. And if they cannot deal with truth, that there is male and female, that they are one or the other, if they can't embrace that basic reality and truthfulness, then any other, it seems to me, truth in the world becomes suspect. I mean, what in the world do they land on upon what is right and wrong, what is truthful, what is false, if they cannot even comprehend, and if they are told, in fact, that they are born in the wrong body? I mean, it has to have enormous psychiatric impact for years to come.
Well, you know, kids look to adults to, and when adults fail to do that, when adults fail to represent, first of all, that there is reality. Reality is not a subjective, made-up kind of a thing. Everyone makes up their own reality. There is one reality, and the reality is that we are all born, well, we are all from the moment of conception, either male or female. And so you're 100% correct. This is a terrible thing to do to young children. And then everyone is scratching their heads and, you know, complaining and saying, well, there's so many mental health issues among our youth. Well, yeah, there's so many mental health issues for many reasons. But one big reason is that we are misrepresenting reality to these children. And we are leading them to think that they can just keep each person create their own reality. So that is extremely destructive, you know, from a mental health perspective.
Dr. Miriam Grossman, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. We appreciate you unpacking this great information for us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, friends, this is going to wrap up today's edition of Washington Watch. I know we were having a little bit of audio problem with Dr. Grossman there. The website, if you want to get this information yourself and see the list of the hospitals and so forth, the website is donoharmmedicine.org. Donoharmmedicine.org. I encourage you to go check that out. All right. Thank you again for joining us today on Washington Watch. Look forward to being back with you again tomorrow. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.